Hi, welcome to this, the fifth episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Hi, I'm Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
We're A Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
And I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. And what we're going to talk about today, as we alluded to in the last episode, is loss and multiple sclerosis. And loss is a very overarching, big thing to talk about. I mean, a lot of times when you think loss, you think death. And obviously that is loss. But then there's more to it when you're living with multiple sclerosis.
And certainly there is, I mean, death of an ability, of independence. I mean, we certainly have a lot to talk about with loss and multiple sclerosis, and it's an ongoing process. You're not going to get your diagnosis and boom, lose it all in one day. That's the frustrating part. And it's also the mysterious part. Ooh, everybody likes a good mystery of multiple sclerosis. So that's what we plan to talk about. But I know we have some business. Some things we want to talk about.
Some unfinished business from the previous episode. And we are here, as always, with our trusted, fully masked, and socially distant producer, Ryan.
Hello.
We had talked last time. There was a lot going on because we had our lounge episode, and you had commented about, and I love the story, you getting kicked in the head at the Metallica concert.
Yeah, knee in the head. And I, partially because of the concussion, also partially just living the story down forever. The capper of the story is a week later, Brad, who was with me on the bar at the show, called me. And he said, "Have you been to Metallica.com today?" And I said, "No, why?" He's like, "Take a gander." And I looked, and there was a picture of him on the right, where I would have been, dead center, and then another dude on the left. And he was like, "That camera guy came by about 15 seconds after you left."
Oh, dude.
Just missed it.
Yeah. Oh. So, barf.
But I should have been there.
Did you save the photo? I mean, screenshot?
No. I still remember exactly what it looks like in my head. It's burned into my memory, but I don't want to relive it.
I can't say as I blame you.
Awful.
That is the total posterity, though, man. It's like, there, see who is it there?
Yeah.
Brad?
I could have just, I should have photoshopped myself into it. Yeah, that would have been good. Ryan should be here.
this should be me.
Yep, exactly. But also, just on recapping our lounge hour, I gave you guys sort of homework, or you said you would probably forget, but I was going to ask if you had watched either The Wire or we talked about Walk the Line on Netflix, the Johnny Cash movie.
Teacher, the dog ate my homework.
I'm sorry that we disappoint.
No.
We should.
I'm sure your queue is extensive. So, I mean, everybody always has stuff to watch before the biggest show.
Not necessarily, though, Ryan.
I was giving you an out.
I want to say cognitive. That's a reality. That you can talk about something, and I don't know if it's because of my age or because of my multiple sclerosis, where I can be totally best of intentions, paying attention. Yes, I'm going to watch The Wire. And then an hour and a half later, I'm like, oh, crap, what did I say I was going to watch?
What was the name of that?
Yeah, and Walk the Line.
I Walk the Wire?
Exactly. And so, but now that we're talking.
I couldn't find it on Netflix. There's no such movie as Walk the Wire, Ryan. Yeah.
You're making that up.
Yeah, pretty good.
But if we make a note, I'm pretty good about checking and keeping track of that.
Yes, you are.
So we will have The Wire.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one's, it's, you know, five seasons or something. So it's a bit of a, you know, job because it's 10 episodes, each episode's an hour long. So, I mean, you're looking at a pretty good time commitment there, but it is, you know, a part of culture now just because it's referenced all the time. If you see the right things or whatever.
Unless you're Dan and Jennifer, yeah, you just sit in your house and do nothing and wait for your...
Well, like a while ago, while Obama was president, like somebody asked him who his favorite TV fictional character was, and he said Omar from The Wire, which got some weird responses because if you know that character, like that's a strange answer for a president to give.
Well, and that makes me feel doubly lazy that it's just like, oh, we didn't watch, we didn't have the time and stuff, but the president has. He's running the country and dealing with people worldwide, and we're sitting in our house during a pandemic and say we don't have the time to watch something on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yes, that we will. We will watch The Wire after we, and just this week, it's Michigan, and we have State Action Day for the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. So Tuesday, we will be meeting with legislators throughout the state to talk about the importance of multiple sclerosis. And there's some different legislation that we'll be talking about. So we have, we have been couch potatoes.
We've also been working with the MS Action Day and everything with meetings and legislators. And it's always an exciting thing. And we should like tap into you, Ryan. You could be an activist too. And
as if you're not busy enough.
Yeah, because you have nothing else.
Once all this grandma stuff settles, I feel like my life's going to open back up a little bit. Like even with the pre-referenced ER thing, I don't need to tell the story again or whatever, but with my ER leg thing, I told the doc at the free clinic and then the actual ER doc later. And it's like, the only reason I'm here is because I had the thoughts like, oh, if this is like a serious leg clot that would kill me, my grandma would be in so much trouble right now because I'm her primary caregiver kind of. Like, I mean, I know I don't like bathe her or feed her like she's in a place, but if I, you know, was in the hospital, she'd be kind of boned for a while.
Yeah, she'd be stuck. Yeah.
And that is the reality of a caregiver. And I know Dan and I, we deal with that all the time, that if something happens to Dan, what happens to Jennifer? And conversely, if something happens to Jennifer, what happens to Dan? So we get you with your grandma. And I know you didn't really want to jump into your ER experience, but now that we've talked about it, it's a really good story. So Ryan, tell us about your ER, your latest and hopefully last ER visit for a while.
Yeah, we've had a lot of front-loaded Ryan lately, so after I'm done telling the story, I'm going to shut up for the rest of the episode.
No, please, you add a very good element to this.
A week ago, I had started having a pain in my leg, and I felt down there, and it felt like a bug bite, or it kind of looked like a bug bite. It was a little red, but I had a bump under the skin. And my dad and I both have the fatty tumor lipoma things. I have them all over my body, and they're generally no big deal. And I had one come in on a nerve one time, and that hurt really bad for a couple of days. And so I thought, oh, it could be that, or it could be a bug bite, and no big deal. And so after a week, and I'm like, this still really hurts, and the redness had spread a bit, but then receded. So I was like, okay, it's getting better. And then I just had, I was, trying to keep it elevated and all that sort of stuff, and just about a week into it, and I was like, this isn't getting a lot better very fast, so something's probably wrong. So I went to a clinic in Midland, because I don't have health insurance right now. He looked at it and he goes, oh, it's not an infection. I don't know what this is. I think it's a blood clot because it's warm to the touch and there's a bulge. And he's like, you should go to the ER right now. I'm not charging you. Just leave. And I'm like, wow. Okay.
That's a little urgent and extremely important.
Yeah, and it's, I hate being in hospitals, so it was terrifying the whole time. Plus, the ER was so full. There were so many people in there that, as soon as I checked in, I'm like, can I wait outside? And he's like, yes, you can. I'm like, it's cold out here, but I don't care.
These are COVID times, and you say.
A guy came in with COVID symptoms. I saw him breathing as he walked in, the pulling his shoulders back, trying to get a deep breath kind of thing. And he wasn't wearing a mask and started coughing as soon as he... I was like, what is wrong with you?
I will be in the parking lot if you need me.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, I need to find the exit farthest away from that guy and go hang out there.
It's almost like ERs need to have the little thing that you hang on to, like you do at restaurants when they have a waiting thing.
Yeah, and you're waiting for your table.
That's what I thought. It's like, take everybody... You have to take everybody's phone number anyway. Take their cell phone number, tell them to go back out to their car and wait. Yep. And just call them in order. That's the easiest thing to do. And I even called the ER and asked. It's like, hey, if the dude that was in the ER waiting room while I was in there gets positive COVID test, do you notify everybody? And she's like, well, that's a violation of HIPAA law or whatever. I'm like, I'm not asking for the dude's name or his address. I just want to know, did I possibly come in contact with something that could kill me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, well, it's an ER. You're going to be around sick people. I just like...
You're missing the point, ma'am.
Yes. I was like, it is no wonder this state is drowning in COVID right now. Like, we're the highest in the nation, I think, or, you know, real close to the top.
Yeah.
Like, gosh, man, it's such an easy thing to not mess up, but we're messing it up.
Big yeah. time. Yes. Ugh.
And that is, you know, that'll be yeah. something that'll be good when hopefully more people will get vaccinated and the numbers will go down and life yeah. will get back to normal. But yeah. as we talk about that, I mean, there's...
Oh, I was supposed to cap the ER story because I didn't resolve... Oh, yeah. Because I do have a blood clot in my leg, but it's not the serious, like, break off and kill you one. It's just a superficial is what the doctor said. So I have to modify... I have to wear, like, socks, like the...
Compression socks.
Yeah, there you go.
Ted hose.
Yeah, and, you know, seeing my blood pressure on the machine while I was nervous in the hospital made me realize I should probably start taking better heart health steps. Because it was real bad. But as I sat there and listened to music and breathed calmly, like I saw it drop from hypertension level 3 down to just like, you need to eat better, kind of like early hypertension. I'm like, okay, good. So it's just that I
hate... It's just hypertension helping me.
It's just mostly that I hate being in a hospital. Like I'm nervous the whole time. So.
So will that be considered a chronic illness now? Will you have to take care of all the time? I mean, be mindful of this, or I mean, what exactly defines chronic illness? I'll get back to you on that. But you know what I mean? And I'm not...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like it's... I mean, I know I'm still early in on it, but my mom had had a heart attack by the time I'm my age now, and then my dad had one not super long after that. So it's definitely in my history.
Wow.
And I haven't really been taking the best care of myself, but you know, I'm in relatively okay shape, but probably stand to lose a few and then eat healthier and stop drinking as much, I suppose.
Which... And so this was kind of your warning wake-up call.
Yeah, kind of, hopefully. Hopefully it sticks. That's my one concern.
Yeah.
You're good for like a week or something. Yep. And it's like, oh, well, I can do this.
I had my smoothie today. I literally did on the ride over. I'm like, I'm going to skip lunch and I'll have like a vegetable smoothie or something. And that's what I did, and like, I don't know, got to cut sugar and salt. It's like, I have a friend in Austin who had a heart scare, and he took it. Like, I mean, he's a pretty large dude, and he was like, yep, I texted him. He's like, yep, no salt, no sugar, you know, no caffeine. I was like, oh, no.
I was going to say salt, sugar, okay, I could do that, but caffeine, it's like, uh-uh.
Nope. Yeah, he didn't say alcohol, though, probably because he's a, you know, a beer dude. Like, he brews his own and stuff, but. Anyway, so sorry. Yeah, let's ignore Ryan.
No, that was awesome. But what we'll do, because we did have the recap of everything that happened before, but we will take a break. And when we come back, we will get into the topic of the day. The topic of the podcast is loss and multiple sclerosis. Welcome back to this episode, and what we're talking about now, we'll get right into it, talking about loss and multiple sclerosis. And we had talked, like, it's not just, you know, obviously loss and death, but I mean, there's a lot of things that you deal with and things that you lose when living with multiple sclerosis.
And I think it's such a deep subject, and it's heavy, and I don't want to poo-poo it, or I don't want to make light of it, because I try to be a happy person, and sometimes when you talk about loss and what you've lost, if you're not in the right frame of mind to get yourself out of that, it can be a really dark place to visit, and it's really important to not live there. And so when you talk about loss... I mean, you know as well as I do, Dan, we've lost a lot because of our multiple sclerosis. And is it addressing and acknowledging what you've lost that can help you move forward? So what does loss mean to you?
I think the loss with multiple sclerosis is like you think about things that I no longer can do or things that are different. I mean, I've lost a lot of like feeling in my hands, which I mean, and that's where it's almost like, are there different levels of loss? Or it's kind of like when you talk about like the Ten Commandments, now I'm going off for a second, but I'll come back. But just to make the point, think of the Ten Commandments and stuff, thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain, thou shalt not kill. Is each commandment, does one carry more weight than the other? And so then I question, you know, with loss and multiple sclerosis, I say I've lost a lot of sensation in my hands. So there's some things, there's a lot of things I can't do as well or as quickly as I used to. But thereby then, you, Jennifer, have lost your ability to walk. I mean, both are losses. So I don't want to make it sound like, oh, this is the worst thing in the world that I don't have any, I've lost the feeling in my hands. But are there other things that are like more extreme?
And I suppose that's where empathy comes in. I mean, that just came to my head. You lost. You're a writer. You've lost the ability to use your hands.
To type really, really quick.
To type really, you know, and to have that sensation. So you've lost that. And I can say, oh, boo-hoo, you can't type. I can't walk. Mine's a grade A loss. No.
Yeah, I'm just like mediocre.
It doesn't work like that. And that's where empathy is so important. And so that's a really good question. You know, your loss, as a caregiver, as a spouse, it's important to realize that the world is not just you. That you have to think about the loss that other people around you experience. And again, you can't just stay in your grief the whole time, because that's just not a good place to live in.
Because then we also, we're talking loss of things, you know, loss of ability to walk, you know, and then the people like with cognitive issues, you know, you're losing bladder control. You just, all those losses and everything, but then it's just like, how do you deal with that? How do you move forward, and how do you not just be sad all the time? And I know that's really hard to do, to dig yourself out. And I think a lot of times it's like perpetually in a sand trap, or you're just like, and every time you start to dig out more, just the sand keeps coming down and just keeps you down. So it's just like, this stuff isn't going anywhere. You know, I'm not magically going to regain sensation in my hands and feet. And you're miraculously going to just up in, you know, Christmas miracle, Jennifer's walking again. How do you move forward?
I think for me, and the way that I've moved forward, is I'm not walking right now. I haven't walked. I haven't taken a step on my own without mad assistance from physical therapists in, geez, since 2002. So what's that, 19 years I haven't walked. And instead of sitting and being sad, like, oh, I can't do this, I'm like, I look at what I can do. And that's a really crappy place when you're sitting at the bottom. You're like, but I can't walk. I can't be peppy about the fact that I can tie my own shoe, the shoe that won't go anywhere on its own with ambulatory skills or anything. But it's just, a lot of people lose a lot more than we do with multiple sclerosis. And that's not fair to say. It's near, you know, I tell you, don't compare yourself to others. But sometimes it's necessary to compare yourself. Like, you've got a chronic illness, but there are people that are dying. There are people that are losing their lives or losing their loved ones. And yes, you're losing maybe your ability for right now, but there's always got to be hope. You and I had a conversation about that last night. You know, I have to hold on to hope that I will regain the ability to walk. Maybe it won't happen until I'm 60, which is less than 20 years, but it can happen, and that's what keeps me moving forward.
I guess that's the question is, we say you don't want to live there. You don't want to stay there at the bottom where you're just like, and that's all you're thinking about, and the pain and stuff. And we're in no way, shape, or form saying don't be sad. Don't be, you know, don't understand and don't grieve your loss. I think that's just part of part of the process in moving forward. It's like you've got to be sad. I mean, when I was first diagnosed, I was bawling my head off. Then it's like you find ways to move forward, and I don't know, you don't have like a cutoff point to say, oh, well, you need to be done now. But I think you need to be done quickly. I mean, you can always, like you say, go back and revisit and be sad for the moment, but then you need to, you know, just pick yourself up. And so, I mean, I'm sad that, you know, that there are things that, you know, I don't run anymore. And, you know, part of me, I'm sad, but then part of me is like, I find other things to do. I find other things to succeed. It's just like, I can't run, but I can, you know, I've done a lot more writing because I'm not running. One of the things that makes me sad, and now we're getting personal, and I hope you don't mind, but when you talk about like you have dreams and that you're walking in your dreams, or you've talked about times where you wake up and sometimes you've been like, I wish that was just a dream that I couldn't walk. And I feel so sad. And how do you deal with that? Or how have you dealt with that? Now I'm putting you on the spot and digging deep.
Well, I think if you ask, I don't want to make you sad. No, so maybe that's one thing, is I don't like to be sad. So if I don't like to be sad, I certainly don't want to make my loved ones sad. And again, that's like looking outside of yourself and thinking about the other people around you, which is a really hard place when you're sad. But it's also, I mean, I go back to college to learning about the 5 stages of grief, you know, the ultimate, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, where you just think about grief and how you have that denial, that isolation, and your anger and your bargaining, your depression, and eventually you will get to acceptance. And yes, I don't accept that I don't walk. I love that I have a dream where I walk. And maybe that's what keeps me going, is that there is that dream, that hope, that yes, someday I can reclaim that, regain that use of my legs. And right now, my God, I can stand up when I have to use the bathroom. So I look at that, and I'm happy and I'm thankful for that. And again, you know, I have a very dear friend that lost her life at 42. And I think every day, thank God, you know, not that that's fair to say, but it's just like, I have to be thankful that I'm alive.
Wow.
I mean,
total sense. I mean, but it is, it's like, those are the things that it's just like, and I've always commented, it's like, is it pessimistic or optimistic? When I don't think, oh, it always could be worse, but I always think it could be worse, or that, you know, there are other things that could happen that will just make my crappy life even crappier. So then all of a sudden, to make it look like what I'm dealing with right now, Dan, wasn't that bad, was it? Shut your mouth and move on. And that's not to undermine or poo-poo anything about the grief, but at the same time, it's just like how you move forward. It's like, in light of what we discussed earlier, there was an accident when I was 11 months old, so I've been blind in my right eye since I was 11, blind. I mean, and there's...
Since you were 11 months old.
Or 11 months old.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want people to lose sight of that. Since you were 11 months old, you've been blind in your right eye.
And maybe that's for the better, that I didn't lose it when I was like 16, 21, whatever. So I didn't know any better. The world was still new to me. But at the same time, I never long for those days, or I never say, oh, I wish I could see out of my right eye. It's just like, I know that's not going to happen. So what do I do? Well, look, look at what I've done for how many decades. I'm doing well, and I can't see out of my right eye. So it's just, you know, so then there are other things, there are worse things that can happen. I mean, certainly, yes, there are better things.
You look at things and you say, accept or be thankful that things aren't worse. And I think just sitting here, I had that epiphany with, I mean, honest to God, while we were just having this conversation, what is going to make this better? Like, what can I control that will make this better? If I'm having a crappy moment, I can look at a picture of puppies, or I can turn on some happy Tom Petty music that will boost my spirit, or what can I do to control the situation? And I think that that is a really important thing with multiple sclerosis, that lack of control. This stupid disease has such a grasp on me. If you're really honest about it, this disease controls so much of me. So when I get those moments where I can control it, I think that that's pretty powerful. And control makes such a difference, you know, to help. Like, I was looking at things or thinking about things that help when I'm in a poopy mood. You know, you can take care of yourself. You can exercise. You can journal. You can hang out with your friends. But sometimes that stuff where you can get control, like journal. I cannot use my right hand for the life of me on certain days. So journaling will just frustrate me and make me angry. So that's that spiral where just like you're depressed and then you try and like, oh, I'm going to journal and get my thoughts out. And you're like, well, God darn it, I can't use my stinking hand. That's not helping.
But it just kicks you down further.
Yeah. Right? And so, but you at least, you can kind of giggle at the irony, like, I want to journal and have a quiet moment myself. And all I'm doing is just getting so angry and just like, this sucks, but there will be a better day. I would like to believe, and I, you know, maybe that's naive, but who can tell you that it's going to be worse tomorrow? Same person can tell you it's going to be worse, but also somebody else can say it's going to be better. And that's you, Dan. For me, like, you always have that ability. And I appreciate that. And I'm trying after 15 years of marriage to look at life and say, yeah, appreciate where you are now and make it better for yourself, however that looks like.
You know, there was something you talked about just in terms of the ultimate loss, you know, and the death of a loved one, a friend. And that's just part of life. I mean, and that's something every person can deal with, that kind of grief, that kind of loss. And everyone's just like, you know, time heals all wounds, and there's like an acceptance. And then there's, you know, then you feel like, oh, I want closure. And then you have that closure. But then I guess something like then the loss that we have, or losses that you have with multiple sclerosis, do you ever get closure? And the fact that it's not a universal thing. I mean, you have to connect with others who have MS who truly understand. So it's just like, at what point do we get the closure? I mean, because you know, you say, okay, well, closure, and I can help with this by journaling. Well, then you have then this in your face that you can't control your hand today. And it's just like, do we ever get closure with the things that we've lost? I'm asking hypothetically, I'm asking myself, and I think, I don't know, as though, even in the loss of a loved one, yeah, there's some levels of closure, but I mean, there's still things that like remind you, and then maybe come Christmas or come just someday, there are things that just remind you, and then it's just hits you hard all over again.
I literally just had this experience 2 days ago. So I was in grandma's room doing a bunch of stuff, and my mom died in 2010 after I moved to Texas. She'd been sick for a while, and I hate to say it, but like, we weren't the closest, and you know, I'd always been like, whatever. But when she actually died, it took my guts out for a little while. But going through grandma's stuff, I found a note in my mom's handwriting, and my little heart just went, oh crap, and just snapped a little bit. It's like, oh, why? Both times, like right when she died, and then this thing just felt exactly the same.
Well, and you talk like, you know, she died back in 2010.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, the 10 years you're in Texas, you're doing everything else you do. And it's like, so then it's like you did move on and it's there, but then yeah, all of a sudden you didn't expect that, you know. Yeah. Obviously come the holidays, you know, there's going to be things that, you know, I've got a decoration, or, you know, Christmas decoration that I got that was my grandma's. And, you know, I'm not sad. You just remember fondly the memories. But at the same time, you know that's going to happen. You know the holidays, yep, come. You know there's going to be some sadness. But you're doing stuff for your grandma, and then just boom, where'd this letter come from? My mom. Yep.
And also, I mean, my grandpa died when I was in high school, and I was super close to him, and it was basically like 1-2 punch in the face, because I'm going through grandma's box of, you know, pictures of grandpa, and then found the note from my mom. It's like, bah. So yeah, that was a rough day. But even as you get older, you still can get kicked right in the gut from that stuff.
Yeah, and I think that closure in my head, when you're talking, the ultimate closure is death. You know, that's when you're going to have to go through these emotions. And when you stop going through them, that's when you stop. Yep. I mean, that's just like in the most basic childish sort of thinking. And right now I'm being childish.
No, that's not childish. That's the definitive end. But then it's just like a question of how do you go forward? And I think, you know, we've touched on that, you know, just like the, you know, I say, oh, things could be worse. It's just like embrace the good that we have. I mean, we can say, oh, I can't believe it rained today. Well, it's like, thank God it's not snowing. Thank God I don't have to put on a coat to go outside because it's warmer now. And just think what you wouldn't give in the dead of winter to have this, to have, oh, dang it, it's raining.
So again, we've talked so many times, not so many times, but we've talked a number of times in the past about how important perspective is. And you're right. I mean, I whine in December that you can't go out to the garage without putting on a coat. And I can go out to the garage right now and I can roll out there and I'm, look at me, I don't have a coat on and I'm not freezing and I'm not uncomfortable. So that's a win. And maybe that, if you think about it like you do, Dan, so often that this is a challenge, like a game, little wins, like, good job, team. We went out to the garage and we didn't have to put on a coat. Or, you know, there are birds outside because it's actually warm enough for birds to be chirping pretty noises. And, you know, except in there are flowers peeking their heads out of the ground. So just those little wins. But that's, thank you for sharing that, Ryan.
And, no problem.
You know, just that grief and loss is ever, it's a human.
Yeah, I believe that fairy tale-ish and stuff, but like you're always kind of alive as long as someone remembers you. There's a little piece of you out there somewhere. So like if you lose somebody, you know, yeah, it hurts, but your thoughts and your feelings, I think, you know, I like that energy sort of thing. Like, I feel like everything is kind of connected a little bit, not like the force or anything, but like, I think like people leave marks on each other, and however spiritual we want to get, wherever somebody is or wherever their particles ended up, whatever the heck you want to say, I still feel connected to somebody, you know, that isn't here anymore, like has long turned to dust and is gone.
Mm-hmm. And then not to put you on the spot, but I mean, how do you deal? I mean, because we're all humans. I mean, so whether you have MS or not, but I mean, how do you deal?
My cover is working. Sorry.
Oh, no.
Need a little levity in there, a little bit of start to cry.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, well, then I don't want to make you cry.
No, Ryan. Man, go ahead. I'm not afraid to cry.
Metallica sucks. No.
That used to make me so mad when I was a kid. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. Because, I mean, you know, growing up as a kid, you identify with things. And if somebody attacks your identity, that sucks.
Yeah.
And, yeah, people are like, oh, they suck. And I was like, have you ever listened to them? No. Like, oh, yeah. Screw you then.
But do we become better at coping with grief and loss because we're dealt with it daily? I mean, just with multiple sclerosis, is that where we become like more seasoned veterans of sorts?
Well, I mean, it's that thing like if you lose a parent young as opposed to old, you know, they've had a fuller life. So it's that sort of, you know, you're more prepared for it, I suppose. And it's that kind of sudden stuff. Like my grandpa they were on vacation. They just drove down to Alabama and he was one of those old stubborn dudes born in the 30s where it's like, I'm sure he knew something was wrong for a while, but just didn't say anything. And then the car ride down, he was having like vision problems and headaches and stuff. And so they went to an ER down there and the doctor was like, yeah, you have cancer everywhere. Like it was in his lungs and his brain. It was just everywhere. And he got up here, and 2 weeks later, he was dead. Like, it was, there was nothing they could do.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like that. So, you know, it was just that. I mean, I, around my family, I was trying to be, you know, good, you know, for my sisters and strong for mom and all that. You know, my stepdad liked my grandpa a lot. My dad likes my grandpa a lot. And so, but as soon as I was alone with my friends, big giant ball of tears. Like, I fell down in my best friend's front room. I just like walked in and went poof, just right down.
Because and you had to hold that, those emotions.
Oh,
in,
yeah.
And it's just like, and it's like, you be strong when you need to be strong. But yeah, as soon as you can let your guard down, it's, yep, just like, yeah, that's a ton.
And it's like that Dennis Leary Irish guy joke. It's just like, I'm part Irish, I guess, somewhere. And, you know, you hold it in. It's like, right, so it's like, get that lump. And then eventually you just blow up. Yeah. That's what happens in Ireland. It's not the IRA. It's just Irish guys that have held their emotions in for so long. They just eventually explode.
But, and I think that's where you do. And that's why we say it's like you can't not have those moments of grief and, yeah, and things. You need to let it out. You need to go to a safe space.
Yeah, holding in something, yeah, that difficult, oh, that would just gut you.
Yeah. I think I'm just sort of like, wow, that's a pretty heavy topic. Thanks for bringing Dennis Leary into it. Then we've talked about how our experiences, you know, me as a person with relapsing remitting MS, Jennifer with secondary progressive, I mean, just what we've dealt with for, you know, 20 plus years. There are a couple articles online that we wanted to point out and just drive you to that we thought were really, really helpful in defining this. The one is from Very Well Health, Experiencing Grief with Multiple Sclerosis, and the subhead is perfect. It's like, it's okay to feel vulnerable. We'll have a link to that on our website, acoupletakesonms.com, and another article that we had found
Is from our very dear friend, Kathy Chester, who is an amazing writer who is also living with multiple sclerosis. She had an article published back in 2017. Oh, that's on my friend Amy's birthday. Happy birthday, Amy. Anywho, it was from the Multiple Sclerosis News Today, and Kathy's article was so perfect for our conversation, titled How to Handle Grief and Why It's Important for Your Health. And I think that's kind of what Ryan alluded to when you were talking about, Dan, that it's important to handle grief and move forward just to protect your health and to keep your health healthy.
And so we will have that on our website, and we also include it in the liner notes for our show. That'll be with everything. There's just really good comprehensive articles that kind of get in touch on several things, talking about loss and vulnerability. And I mean, it's just, you know, we're experts to a point from our experiences, but you want other perspectives on this. This is a great topic to really reach out to other resources. And I think that's if you're dealing with feelings of loss and grief and everything with your MS, I mean, find people to talk to, find resources to help you through. And you can do that through a lot of things. And that's why I say go to these articles. They'll be a good source of inspiration for real.
And again, do anything that will help you reestablish some level of control in your life. Even if it's picking out what you're having for dinner tonight.
What are we having for dinner tonight?
And that's C, establish control, Dan. What sounds good to you?
Leftover pizza.
That's perfect. That's the way to do it. But it's just the little things. I mean, you just don't know how good it feels to be able to make a decision and to do something for yourself. And I think that's why this disease can be so frustrating and can be a constant loss, is because you're just losing things. And you don't have that control, but when you can get some back, that really helps make you feel better.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation today. That was, it's a deep topic, but I think it's just something we live with every day in dealing with multiple sclerosis. And do you have anything else to add, Jennifer, Ryan? Are we good to go? I think this is, are people free to?
I really want to bring something fun and to like uplifting at the end, but I don't know. I got nothing.
I'm drinking coffee.
And that is something.
That's uplifting.
That's literally. Yeah.
I'm drinking bubbly water.
See?
Fizzy lifting drink.
Burp, Charlie.
Yeah, there you go. Burp. I made myself laugh. I'm happy now.
That's good.
Well, I think, and that's the big thing, is always being able to, you know, we've been, you know, dealing with something very heavy, but I think it's just move forward and finding things that make you happy, things that help you to move on. And hopefully, well, and that's what we will talk about in our next episode, is ways to move on. And we're talking about MS mantras and music therapy. And there's a lot in there, because I think we've talked a lot in the past about music and everything and the way it picks you up.
I can just hear listeners in my head. Dan's going to talk about Springsteen. Ryan's going to talk about Metallica.
And oh, there's so much more. I've got like one other group now.
I will think of any other music artist except Metallica this time. It's going to be a trial, but I'm going to do it.
And you can. And I think, and that's the one thing, is we're talking about the mantras are just things that help you move forward. And obviously, yes, Springsteen, Metallica, Jennifer.
Whatever, Jennifer.
Whatever.
Whatever she was going to say, and then we interrupted her talking about something else.
No, I think let you guys go.
All right. Jennifer, I'm sorry. I forgot you were there. But yes, we'll talk about MS mantras and music, and truly music therapy. And we're not the only ones. I mean, there's stuff about this everywhere, and it really helps. So we will talk about that. And that's one of the big things that helps us to move forward. So be sure to come back next time. You can follow us on Twitter, and the handle there is Couple Takes on MS, not A Couple, but Couple Takes on MS. And Ryan, the producer, is...
You can email me for contributions to the show, anything, if you want to ask Dan and Jen a question, if you want to just have a statement and relate how you feel. My email is actomspodcast@gmail.com.
And so thank you for listening. You can find us, the podcast is on our website, and you can find the links to every place it's available on your favorite podcast site. And that website is acoupletakesonms.com. And you can follow us, download the episodes, comment, tell other people you really like Couple Takes on MS, and we can get the stories out there to help other people move forward with their multiple sclerosis. Until next time, I'm Dan Digman.
And I'm Jennifer Digman.
And we're a Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
I'm rolling.
And together, we're moving forward. Take care.